Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate
vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Brahmadayo yat krita se tu pala.
Brahmadayo yat krita se tu pala.
Yat karanam vishwamidam jamaya.
Yat karanam vishwamidam jamaya.
Agya kari yasya pishatcha charya.
Agya kari yasya pishatcha charya.
Oho vibhum nascharitam vidambanam.
Oho vibhum nascharitam vidambanam.
Brahmadayo yat krita se tu pala.
Brahmadayo yat krita se tu pala.
Yat karanam vishwamidam jamaya.
Yat karanam vishwamidam jamaya.
Agya kari yasya pishacha charya.
Agya kari yasya pishacha charya.
Aho vibhum nascharitam vidambanam.
Aho vibhum nascharitam vidambanam.
Power of the material energy which causes the creation of the material world. He is great, and therefore his devilish characteristics are simply imitation. Purport. Lord Shiva is the husband of Durga, the controller of the material energy. Durga is personified material energy, and Lord Shiva, being her husband, is the controller of the material energy. He is also the incarnation of the mode of ignorance and one of the three deities representing the Supreme Lord. As his representative, Lord Shiva is identical with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is very great, and his renunciation of all material enjoyment is an ideal example of how one should be materially unattached. One should therefore follow in his footsteps and be unattached to matter, not imitate his uncommon acts like drinking poison. Srila Prabhupada is using his own intelligence to interpret the Shastra. When you're presenting someone else's words, words spoken in the past, words spoken in a different language than your own, words spoken by somebody other than you, written down in a book, and you cannot enter the mind of the author. The author is probably dead and gone. That is the job of a translator or an interpreter. He has to present or try to present what the author said, what he meant to say. Prabhupada is presenting to us the Bhagavatam. At least in the body that we know Prabhupada as, he wasn't present at Naimisharanya or on the banks of the Ganga when Parikshit heard from Shukadeva. Maybe he was in some other body. So not being present, not having heard the original, not having consulted with the speaker, Shukadeva, or with Sutta Goswami, he has to use his own intelligence to understand what the words were intended to mean. Just like words have various meanings. And even when you put them together in a sentence, and you can sort out that, okay, certain meanings don't fit. For example, there are actually standard principles for how to do this, taught by the experts in the science of poetry, science of art of poetry, rather. But they have some systematic analysis of how poetry is to be composed and understood. So the question is, words have various meanings. A dictionary may list several meanings for the same word. How do you decide which meaning applies in a certain sentence? So there are standard principles taught by Kavi Karnapur and his predecessors. There are generally, when you have anekartha, word with multiple meanings, and there are many such words, there are 10 basic principles you can apply. Like what other words and ideas is conjoined with. What's the context, the overall context of the story it's placed in? And other principles. For example, you may have a sentence, Arjun fought with Karna. He fought against Karna. Okay? But Arjun is a name of at least two famous people, the son of Pandu, brother of Yudhishthir, and the other one was Kartavirya Arjuna, a great demon, who was killed by Parashuram. Which one is it? The word has both meanings. But if you say Arjuna fought with Karna, first of all you can tell, well, this Arjuna is being put together with Karna, and they're fighting. Kartavirya Arjuna lived millions of years before that. Or, I don't know how many, lots of years before. He couldn't have ever even seen Karna. Arjuna is famous for having, had some conflict with Karna. There was a rivalry. So it's much more likely that it was Arjuna, the son of Pandu, even though it doesn't say it in the sentence. And therefore, from the juxtaposition of Arjuna with Karna, we can decide, okay, it's that Arjuna. And there's other principles for deciding how to interpret ambiguity, when words can have more than one meaning, when sentences can have more than one meaning. But those principles don't cover every possibility. There are subtle things. There are sometimes sloppiness on the part of the author where he doesn't actually make it clear. This person is not an expert writer, perfect writer, can write sentences that leave the readers confused and don't actually clearly express what he had in mind. He may have a good idea in mind, but he doesn't know how to express it, right? So that the reader gets the same idea when he reads the sentence. Anyway, this is the job of a translator. He's got to put it into a different language, or just even in the same language, explain it to people hundreds or millions of years later who don't live in the same world. This is what Prabhupada's doing with the Bhagavatam. 5,000 years later, a text that was spoken in Sanskrit that hardly anybody knows nowadays, and the world 5,000 years ago was quite a different world. The culture was different. The ideas that people dealt with were different. The way they looked at things was different. The images that flashed through their minds, the poetic images and the metaphors, were different. All these demigods and other creatures we never even heard of that they're familiar with, that are referred to all the time in all these verses, just as just metaphorically, just Chandra, Surya, just mentioned, and everybody's supposed to know who they are. So the translator, namely Srila Prabhupada, he has the responsibility to explain it to us, and he does an excellent job. Prabhupada's translation is transparent, as much as possible. Transparent, not opaque. He's not just throwing at us a learned translation to show off what he knows without very much concern whether we actually get the idea. More, some translators and interpreters are more interested in establishing themselves as authorities and being respected and honored than actually enlightening their readers. In fact, if they can mystify their readers, then they've got them captured. If you can't be understood, then you must be profound. There are many so-called spiritual authors who play that game. But Prabhupada did the opposite. He tried to make everything understood and somehow explain this foreign world simply to us so that we could start understanding it. So he's an interpreter, a translator, not just in the sense of translating from one language to another. He's translating one world into another. But an interpreter is always filtering what he's presenting through his own intelligence. That can never be avoided. There's no such thing as a completely, absolutely impartial or objective translation. It cannot be done. you can't say exactly the same thing in the English language to people in the 21st century. The ideas are different, the language is different. And something is lost always in the translation. There can never be an exactly perfect translation. It all depends on how the author, what the translator, the interpreter, contributes. It's always going through his mind, his intelligence. If he's good, it'll be as little violence done as necessary. Just like an expert surgeon who cuts you up a little bit, and sheds a little bit of blood, and finishes the job and patches you up. And a sloppy surgeon will make a mess of things. So a good translator will do the minimum violence, even though violence does have to be done. That's probably what he's done. But here, Prabhupada has to... the point I wanted to make was about... demigod. Lord Shiva is a demigod. Prabhupada, whenever he talks about Lord Shiva, he always makes the point of identifying him as a demigod. This word is not there in the original text. There is no word demigod. Yes, there is a word in Sanskrit, upadeva. You know, almost a god. That's the closest word we have in Sanskrit to demigod. Demigod is some old Christian idea of not God, but some angel who's close to God. Half a god. Demi means half in Latin. Half of a god. But Prabhupada picks up on this word and hammers it on our heads all the time. Every time he talks about anybody who's not God, but is worshipped by some people as if he was God, he always gives them the label, demigod. Lord Shiva, Prabhupada, adds his, you know, filtering it through his intelligence, always gives us the interpretation. Whenever Lord Shiva is mentioned, demigod. He's not the Supreme Lord. He's close to it. He can be considered non-different from the personality of Godhead as his representative. But anyone who thinks that Lord Shiva is it, and that Vishnu or anybody else is secondary, is sorely mistaken. And actually is committing great aparad. That is the offense against the holy name, number two. That one who thinks the name of Vishnu to be equal to that of Shiva, Brahma, or any of the demigods. Or thinks, in other words, that or there's another verse, I think from Paramapurana. Yastu narayanam devam bama rudradi daivitai samatve naiva viksheta sapashandi bhave duram. Anyone who gets the idea that Narayan is no better than the other gods, Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva, that they're all equal, and Narayan, who is Vishnu, is just one of the three. He's no doubt an atheist. He cannot call himself a theist, a believer in God, because he's insulted God by equating him with two ordinary people. Lord Shiva is not a jiva. He's better. He's something special. Different than all of us, everybody who's a jiva. Up to Lord Brahma, we're all jivas. That means we're very small, and we're capable, therefore, of coming under the control of the material energy. Lord Shiva is not small, he's infinite. But in the way he expanded from Lord Vishnu, something changed. He's not Vishnu. You can turn milk into yogurt, but you can't turn the yogurt back into milk. You know, you can put the yogurt in the oven and it will separate into water and whey or whatever happens. Water and something. But you can't convert it back into whole milk. It can't be done. I don't think so. You know, so Lord Shiva is not the same as Vishnu anymore. He's not God. He's a special expansion of God who's infinite, But the difference is that he comes into contact with the material energy. Lord Vishnu never does. Lord Vishnu consorts only with his spiritual energy. The spiritual energy expands into the consort of Shiva, and the two of them create the material world. Lord Vishnu never gets his hands dirty. The actual process of material creation is actually done by Lord Shiva and his wife, by their combination. Lord Vishnu simply glances at Maya. Mahavishnu, his involvement in the creation is to wake up out of his sleep and take one quick look at Maya and then go back to sleep. And that glance is the power to impregnate Maya and set everything into motion, to agitate her energies and cause the imbalance that results in the whole evolution of material creation. And there are several elements in that glance, as explained by Krishnadas Kaviraj, and he gets his information from the Bhagavatam and from Brahma Samhita. Brahma Samhita contains special explanation that in the glance are the jivas. Well, the Bhagavatam says in the glance of Mahavishnu are the jivas. What is it? Jiva svabhava kalascha svabhava karma svabhava kalascha svabhava jiva evacha. Maybe I have the words a little mixed up. The jivas themselves, their karma, because the jivas who are entering into the new material creation are not newborn. They've been around forever. So they already have their karma that they've started to accumulate in previous creations. So that karma is put to sleep along with them. You know, it's put in a safe deposit box for their next creation, and it's sent along with them. Just like you go from one school to another, they send your records. So your karma is sent along with you, portfolio, from the records department. In the glance of Mahavishnu, the jiva, the karma, the time factor, which is necessary to actually push everything and get it going. You know, otherwise, everything will just, the glance will just fall dead, inert on the ground. But to make everything happen, the time factor is there to push everything. Time doesn't move, nothing happens in the material world. Time is what sets everything into motion. And that's the personal energy of God. That's also in the glance. And beside the karma, there's the svabhava of the jivas. My karma is reactions of what I did in the past. And my life is molded according to that, but also according to my svabhava. My svabhava is my actual personality. You know, what I like, what I want, what I don't like, and what I don't want, that's my svabhava. And that actually comes from the soul, the actual person. But it gets perverted by our material conditioning. Then we have our material svabhava. It's a perverted reflection of our real svabhava, our real nature. We get our material nature. That's something separate from our karma. Because of our nature, we pick up karma. But the svabhava is what's behind it, our propensities, the way we are as individuals, which is originally pure and perfect, but you get it messed up by contact with Maya. That's also in the glance. All in the glance, but also in the glance as additional information. That's explained in the Bhagavatam. But it's a further fact is provided by the early texts of the fifth chapter of the Brahma Samhita that we have by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. He discovered it. That in the glance of Mahavishnu is Lord Shiva. He's also taking a ride in the glance, along with the jivas and their karma and time and everything else, and svabhava of each jiva. Lord Shiva's there. What do we need him for? He's just a hitchhiker, just for the ride. But he's also, it's also very important that he's also coming in on the glance. Because he's the one who's going to become the husband of that Prakriti at whom the glance is directed. And it's by his union with Prakriti that the bodies of the living entities are created, that everything material is created. Brahma is the engineer, but the real progenitors of creation are Mahesha and Devi. Anyway, that's explained in the Bhagavatam and in the Brahma Samhita. Srila Krishna's Kaviraj and Chaitanya Charitamrita has put it all together, and there we have our understanding from Krishna's Kaviraj Goswami. Prabhupada has imbibed that and presented it to us. So that's Lord Shiva. He's almost God. But never, we should never misunderstand thinking that he's independent Lord or that any demigod is. So Prabhupada is taking the responsibility and the liberty of the interpreter to add his own two cents and to always label these great persons as demigods. Not quite God. God with a lower G. He doesn't even use the word like other authors do. God with lowercase. There's God and there's little gods. That wasn't enough for Prabhupada. You'll never see once, I don't think, in Prabhupada's books or even his spoken transcriptions, that he calls the demigods gods. Everybody else in the world does. But Prabhupada insisted, no, demigod. Don't forget, they're only half gods. If you hear the word God, you don't know whether it's lowercase or uppercase. You don't speak the punctuation. So he wanted to make it perfectly clear. They're demigods, only half. Not actually God. That's our philosophy. Achidya beda beda. Difference and non-difference. Non-difference is there. But if we forget that there's difference, then we're in serious trouble. Then we become impersonalists. Or idolaters. We're worshipping idols. Some person who is not God, as if he was God. Then we'll also become adulterers. But that's another thing. Lord Shiva explains to his wife that he taught the Mayavad philosophy to increase unwanted population in the world. So that also happens. Okay, I think I made enough trouble. Any questions or comments? Yeah.
How does Ramadevi fit in with the picture of the
description? Ramadevi is Lakshmi.
Yeah.
Atma, she's mentioned in the Brahma Samhita, Atmana Ramaya Re Me Chaktakalam Sasikshaya. While Lord Vishnu is in this process of being in his yoga nidra, apparently just asleep, doing nothing, and he just wakes up and glances. Seems like he's doesn't do much. But that verse explains that yoga nidra is not a state of doing nothing. Inside, he's experiencing his spiritual realm. He's enjoying with his Rama, his pleasure potency, the goddess of fortune, with all of her expansions, and the whole spiritual realm. So she's there inside his yoga nidra, while he's, we see him just sleeping on his bed. But actually he's enjoying in Goloka and in Vaikuntha with Lakshmi Sahasra, with hundreds and thousands of Lakshmis and Gopis and queens of Dwarka. That's Ramadevi. Ramadevi is Lakshmi, and the original Lakshmi is Srimati Radharani. He's enjoying with his pleasure potency, unseen to us, within his yoga nidra. That's her role. Her role is to be behind the scenes. She's the original potency. Maya Devi's just her expansion. So when Maya Devi's acting, it's the original Ramadevi acting through Maya Devi, actually. She's the creator of everything.
And I was studying this from a Samhita course that Tamal Krishna Maharaj gave, and he was presenting that Lord Vishnu throws the glance, and Ramadevi carries the nature of that glance and deposits it to Lord Shiva, and Lord Shiva, impregnates Maya, and he gives this example that of the powerhouse that Lord Vishnu is like the powerhouse, and Ramadevi is like the cords which carry the current, and Lord Shiva is like the power plant.
Yes.
the Mayadevi is like the electrified object that you put in the PowerPoint.
Yes. Sounds interesting. I don't remember that. But I do remember working with Tamal Krishnaraj in some of the preliminary research he did before writing that book. And he didn't make up stuff. He whatever he wrote is what he saw in the commentaries.
Right.
So I don't remember it, but it must have been dug out of a Bhagavatam commentary.
Right.
Yeah, some it's an esoteric thing, but it must have been an authentic statement of one of the acharyas.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I just don't remember it.
Tamal Krishnaraj wrote a book on Brahma Samhita?
It wasn't published. The BBT thought it was just too complicated.
It's finished?
Well, it was never edited. You know, it was a compendium of so much information and so many quotes. It was like overkill. As far as the BBT trustees were concerned, they thought that, a book that's actually going to be published has to be more selective, not just present everything, every single statement about everything about it. You got to pick and choose and not just overwhelm the readers. So I don't know whether it proceeded, whether there was some attempt to edit it or rewrite it. I don't know.
Yeah. I heard his disciples are
working on it now.
Yeah, they'll finish his thesis and then do that.
Okay.
That's not his disciples. It's Garuda people went into Satchara school. They're editing.
Oh. Okay, that'll be great. Yeah.
Yeah.
But the Brahma Sangha people got in there. That may be his disciple.
I heard that his PhD mentor at Oxford was also participating in that, in writing it, yeah. Dr. Julius Lipner, Jesuit, he's
a Jesuit.
Yeah.
He's a what?
Jesuit, priest. Well, not a priest, a Jesuit, Jesuit-trained professor. Catholic, yeah. Yeah, the expert on Ramanujacharya. He was, the guide of Tamal Krishnaraj in getting his PhD.
He's a priest, and he's an expert in Ramanujacharya.
Not a priest, but he's, from a Catholic background.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Was he devotee? I don't know, I guess so. I mean, because he was very appreciative of Ramanujacharya and was an expert on his philosophy.
Is he now a devotee?
Well, now he's finishing up Tamal Krishnaraj's doctoral dissertation along with those devotees.
So he's a devotee?
Yeah, I guess so.
You said that a translator cannot but do some level of violence to the text.
It's like a surgeon can't do his job without doing some violence.
So how do you as a translator ensure that you do the minimum?
By having good editors to come behind and clean up afterwards. Yeah, editors to check and to straighten things out and make it readable. That's required. You've got to let somebody. Prabhupada said something like that. That he didn't say, "Oh, there's got to be a hierarchy. There's got to be a board, and you got to submit to authority before you can publish anything." And he said, "Before you dare to publish anything, you should have somebody else look at it. Mm-hmm. Somebody." So that's the other thing. That's the main thing is to have somebody else who's competent check it.
The mother was teaching us in questions how to do it, right? Remember?
Yes.
He was giving us like seminar, and he told transparent translation means Prabhupada comes to your place, say to Kiev,
Yeah.
And he gives lecture in Ukrainian,
Yes.
Just this is supposed to be your translation. It's supposed to be in the mood of Prabhupada to know how he would speak in good old Ukrainian spiritual topics,
Yes.
This is good translation. Just be transparent, know your ego, nothing. You're not trying to explain anything, you're not trying to just elaborate on anything.
Yes.
The same with Prabhupada was spoken in Ukrainian to your devotees at that particular time. When
it's extremely difficult to do.
Yeah, but this
you should know, really, you should know your author and know the world that your author is living in. Yeah. We should know Prabhupada and know the world, the spiritual world that he's coming from, otherwise we can't really present him. Not just as book translators, but anybody who's trying to represent Prabhupada has to know him. Know who he is and what he represents.
Otherwise, we'll misrepresent Prabhupada in so many ways, by how we act, by how, what comes out when we open our mouth, and so on. We're translators. We're presenting Prabhupada. We're interpreting Prabhupada for the world. You know, Hare Krishna means representatives of A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami. At least in India, everybody knows who he is. And he knows that we're connected with him. And whatever we are, and whatever we do, and whatever we say, is what the world sees of him. Oh, these Hare Krishnas are just this and that. That's what people see of Prabhupada. So that's our job of translating, you know, whether we're working on books or not. So a good translator should be a good devotee. He should be a good representative of Prabhupada. Otherwise, no matter how materially, grammatically competent he is, he's going to do a bad job. You could find no technical fault with it, but it could be way off just because the person isn't really representing Prabhupada in his attitude. I've seen translations like that where I could not, and I usually can point, just look at a group, one paragraph and find a couple of mistakes. But I've seen translations where I can't find any significant mistakes, but still, I'm not satisfied that it's representing Prabhupada. There's somebody who's got a whole different agenda.
That's in a mode of presentation.
It comes out in the presentation, but it's based on the attitude of the person who's doing the presenting. It's the attitude. You can't be unbiased. What you think and what you feel is going to come out in what you put down on paper, no matter what, how you try to avoid that. You can't just, be the original author. You're not. You're you. And it's coming through you. So you have to be careful. That you should try to be in sync with the attitude of the author if you can. Most translators can't do that. If I'm going to translate, Shakespeare, what am I going to do? Dress up in tights and try to be Shakespeare my whole life? That we can't do. That's crazy. Maybe some people are that crazy and they try to do that. There's one essay by who was that guy? Not Ortega y Gasset. The other guy. The guy who wrote the story about the people who pinned the words on the wall. It's Argentina, Adolphus, what's his name? Yeah, anyway, George, what?
Borges?
Yeah, Jorge. No, it's the other one. I'm sorry, I got the wrong guy. But Jorge, I don't know his whole name. Yeah. Yeah. He wrote an essay about the author, so-and-so, some guy's name, the author of Cervantes' Quixote. And some guy, such a crazy essay about some guy who decided he's going to make the perfect translation. He's going to, rewrite, Don Quixote, and it's going to come out exactly the same, all the same words, without looking at the original. He tried to do it, and he did it. He succeeded. Perfect translation, but it's just the same words. Yeah. And again, and then the point, the actual, the end of the story, we realize that it's not, even though it's the same words, it's not the same. Shukadeva Goswami spoke the same words that he heard from Vyasadeva. He didn't change one word. But Suta Goswami says, Shukumukadami Dudravisamutam. Having been touched by the lips of Shukadeva, it's much more relishable. He's done a translation job without changing one word. It's injected with Shukadeva's spirit, even without changing one word. That's a mystery, how you can do a translation without changing one word. But that's understood by the philosophers who study the science of hermeneutics, interpretation. It's one kind of translation. It's just to repeat the original. With sacred transcendental texts, just repeating the words is an act of translation. When you're speaking it, a different person speaking it at a different time than the original speaking, it comes out, the meaning is different when you speak it again, if you're doing a proper presentation. It's just, your consciousness, it comes to your consciousness. Okay, so there's no impartial, impersonal, objective translation. It can't be done. So you've got to be careful where your consciousness is at if you're going to try to translate. Everybody who reads is going to be affected by it. And that's the impression they're going to get of the author. If your presentation is vague and not, it doesn't all actually come together, that's what they're going to think of the author, that he didn't really have a clear idea. He didn't know what he was saying. And it's all gobbledygook. Then it's misrepresenting, not doing justice to the author. We have to try as much as possible to at least do justice to our authors when we're translating. We're not dealing with even just with Cervantes or Shakespeare. We're dealing with some special authors who have to be treated, presented nicely. Okay. Sure. Thank you. All glory to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam, Ki Jai.